Morning, everybody. It's good to see y'all today. Hope everything's going well for you. Before we go any further, we need to go to the Lord in prayer. I wonder if there'd be any prayer requests upon anyone's heart.
I have a neighbor that I said, would you like to remember him and his family in prayer?
Just remember Don's neighbor. Let's remember Cindy's prayer for Dodger and keep Dylan in your prayers also, that the Lord might be with him in all aspects. And y'all continue to, for me, to pray for Katie. The Lord might give her some guidance. She might come back this way. Pray for all of our children, all the children that's associated with this church in some form or fashion. They need our prayers because most of them aren't here. A lot of them are not here, and they need to be. Let's also remember Cindy's mother and Brenda's mother as well. The Lord might give them comfort. Remember the preacher at 11 o'clock as well, and the Sunday school teachers. Is there anything else?
I had a friend at work called me last night, asked me to have the church pray for his wife. She's been in ICU for the last 2 days from surgery, and she's out of surgery now. She's out of ICU and in a regular room, but she's still got a lot of healing from surgery that she's had, and he just asked me.
Let's remember this request.
Brother Terry, about a year ago, Billy and I made a decision to start a little hospital. And I just got to thank the Lord for that. This morning, he's just been so good to us through this last year. And I just need to thank him for it. I just need to say thank you, Lord, for that. And that he's just walking right beside us through all of it.
Good to hear this, and it's good to thank the Lord for what he's done for us. If there's nothing else at this time, I'll ask Brother Jimmy if he would lead us in prayer.
Thank you. salvation. In Jesus' name we humbly beg and pray.
Amen. You know, it's been said by other people standing up here, and I say it also, that when you start mentioning prayer requests that's been made in the past, you're always afraid you're going to leave somebody out. And I want Jimmy to know that I remember to pray for his mother, but I forgot to say anything about it. And it is, I don't want to offend anyone or make anyone think that their request is any less important to me, but my mind doesn't always keep up with what's going on. So, but Jimmy, I did remember your mother when I prayed. Our Sunday school lesson is here somewhere. Words Fitly Spoken is the title of our Sunday school lesson today. And our devotional and background study comes from Proverbs chapter 25, verses 1 through 10. I'll read that at this time. These are also Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied out. It is the glory of God to conceal a thing, but the honor of kings is to search out a matter. The heaven for height and the earth for depth, and the heart of kings is unsearchable. Take away the dross from the silver, and there shall come forth a vessel for the finer. Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne shall be established in righteousness. Put not forth thyself in the presence of the king, and stand not in the place of great men. For better it is that it be said unto thee, Come up hither, than that thou shouldest be put lower in the presence of the prince whom thine eyes have seen. Go not forth hastily to strive, lest thou know not what to do in the end thereof, when thy neighbor hath put thee to shame. Debate thy cause with thy neighbor himself, and discover not a secret to another, lest he that heareth it put thee to shame, and thine infamy turn not away. Would there be any announcements before we go to our class? If not, at this time I'll ask teachers to take charge.
I just love Proverbs. It's well and good. It's just tough to teach out of. It's consequently, I'm just going to read. Yes, we are. Again. Yes, we are. Beginning with the 11th verse, it says, A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. Now, I read that two or three times yesterday, and I thought it was saying filthy. Yeah, and I was thinking, why is a filthy word like apples of gold and pictures of silver? I've been doing this all wrong all these years. But it's fitly. Fitly spoken. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. As an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, so is a wise reprover upon an obedient ear. As the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refreshes the soul of his masters. Whoso boasteth himself of a false gift is like clouds and wind without rain. By long forbearing is a prince persuaded, and a soft tongue breaketh the bone. Hast thou found honey? Eat so much as is sufficient for thee, lest thou be filled therewith and vomit it. Withdraw thy foot from thy neighbor's house, lest he be weary of thee, and so hate thee. A man that beareth false witness against his neighbor is a maul and a sword and a sharp arrow. Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a broken tooth and a foot out of joint. As he that taketh away a garment in cold weather and has vinegar upon nitre, so is he that singeth songs to a heavy heart. If thy enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat, and if he be thirsty, give him water to drink. For thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head, and the Lord shall reward thee. The north wind driveth away rain, so doth an angry countenance, a backbiting tongue. It is better to dwell in the corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. Now, I'll stop right here just a minute. There must be something going on in our house, because the last time that I taught out of Proverbs, it said it is better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and an angry woman. And now this time it's telling me it's better to dwell in one corner of the house.
I thought it was best to leave that one alone.
Okay, going, moving right along.
One thought, though. This was written by Solomon, and you know, Solomon had a lot of wives and a lot of concubines, so he had a lot on his mind. It keeps coming up.
He keeps revisiting it. As cold
wives and women, you would have problems, trust me.
As cold waters to a thirsty soul, so is good news from a far country. A righteous man falling down before the wicked is as a troubled fountain and a corrupt spring. It is not good to eat much honey, so for men to search their own glory is not glory. He that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls. Now, each one of these verses can stand on its own by itself as a sort of common sense rule to live by day to day. But since the title of our lesson is Words Fitly Spoken, we're going to move back up to the beginning of the reading lesson, where it says a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. Now, Solomon really had a way with words. He could really paint a picture. And this word fitly spoken would be a word spoken at the right time and in the right manner. And not all of us are blessed with that. I mean, let's just face it. We're not all blessed with these beautiful words that we can just spew out at a moment's notice. But he gives us food for thought here. He tells us that there's nothing better than a right phrase given at the right time. And you think about it. That's true. That is true. Whether you're giving it, or whether you're on the giving end or on the receiving end, there's not much, anything more comforting than a word, a special word or a special phrase or a special thought that's given when the time is right, when it's truly needed. There's not anything much better than that. And he says it's like apples of gold and pictures of silver. That's meaning it's something precious. It's something to behold. I don't exactly know what he is truly referencing when he says apples of gold and pictures of silver. But it conjures up something precious, something that's good, something that's beautiful. He says, as an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, so is a wise reprover upon an obedient ear, or someone that's willing to hear. Now, it looks like in this day and time, there is no one that is even wanting to be reproved by anyone. And it seems to be getting more and more such that for a person to bring reproof on another person, it just makes matters worse, generally. But Solomon says that we must have an obedient ear to hear what the message is. Now, in the third chapter of James, in the eighth verse, James says, "But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison." And is that not true? I mean, our speech, our tongue, no one is capable of taming it except we ourselves. I mean, that's not 100% guarantee that even we can control it. How many times have you blurted out something you thought later that maybe you shouldn't have blurted out? Well, that's using that lack of self-control over our tongue, over what we have to say. But what Solomon's saying here is there's a time and place to say and to hear whatever is being said. And it's just as important to be ready to hear something, be it good or bad, as it is to be ready to say something, good or bad or reproving or whatever the case may be. And this is really, here again, being part of Proverbs, being part of Solomon's wisdom, this is just common sense. If a word of a person giving a wise reproof, I'm not just talking about somebody just tearing into somebody just for whatever reason, but if the word is truly needed to reprove someone and it's given to someone who's willing to hear it, then both people will benefit from what is going on. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, somebody needs reproving, and you, from the depth of your heart and following the leadership of God, offer reproof or give reason to the person that they may, in fact, be doing something that's incorrect or not right for some reason or other. And they are receptive to that. Then both of you can benefit from that. The problem is that very seldom works out in life. Because, first of all, the person that usually is given the reproof is mad. And once the reproof is given, the person that's received it is mad also. So this can be a really tough balancing act here to carry out what I think God would have, or to be the way that God would have His people to be. And that is a more kinder, gentler person in all aspects of our lives, because we are children of God. First of all, we are children of God. But second of all, we hold membership in His kingdom. We hold membership here at Faith Missionary Baptist Church. We are also representing Faith Missionary Baptist Church. When we step out, well, when we're here, we're representing Faith Missionary Baptist Church. But especially when we step outside that door, we represent it. So I think the whole gist of this issue is that we need to strive to be a kinder, gentler person, but ready to give advice and ready to receive advice. It's always better in our mind to be able to give it out than it is to take it. And I think that's just natural. But you know, we live in a world that needs to be shown some examples. This world needs a lot of examples. And we're in a place where that the examples that we set forth can do a lot of good because we have the Spirit of the Lord on our side. And if we're out in this world doing what we should be doing, then the example that we set can have far-ranging effects on people. And that goes with our conversation. That goes with our speech and how we conduct ourselves and how we talk to people and how we are receptive to what other people have to say. It says in the 15th verse, it says, by long forbearing. Proverbs is like this. You just jump from one verse to the next, and it's a completely different subject. But what I want to hit on is, in the 15th verse, it says, by long forbearing, patience. By long forbearing, which is patience, is a prince persuaded, and a soft tongue breaketh the bone. A gentle tongue, a gentle voice, gets results. In the 15th chapter of Proverbs, in the first verse, it says, a soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words or harsh words stir up anger. You see, we need to be more about our Father's business. We need to understand what He has in store for us. We need to understand what it is that He would have us to do. And He is not asking us to go out into this world and be quarrelous. He's not asking us to go out into this world and be contentious. He's asking us to be meek and mild and a person that people can have respect in and have confidence in what it is that we have to say. And if we're quarrelous or contentious, how can people have respect in us as a person if we're out there saying things and doing things and I'm talking about myself too, because I sometimes go off the deep end. And it's easy to, no, you don't have to shake your head. But I do. You know, things just all of a sudden just run all over you, and you just, you know, you don't know what's happened in the last 5 seconds because you've just gone berserk. But that's not pleasing to God. And our lesson today, I guess, is we should listen to what is being said here and understand that we have more responsibility, I guess, than the next person does, the one who doesn't have what we have. I'd like to say that my life would be lived in a manner that people would look at me and say, I want what he's got. But I'm afraid that I fall far short of that in so many ways. But I still am responsible for my ways. And when I go out into this world, I have God with me. And that's all we need. We just need to go out here with him with us and listen to what he's telling us, because he will tell you. He'll talk to you. He'll let you know what it is you stand in need of. Okay, moving right along. It says, let me hit one here. Hast thou found honey? Eat so much as is sufficient for thee. In other words, eat only. Only is not in there. I put only in there. Eat only so much as is sufficient for thee, lest thou be filled therewith and vomited. We have a tendency to overindulge in this life. And our overindulgence, I believe, can be in a sinful nature in the sight of God. But we live in a time when there is much around us. There is very much around us. And many times we overindulge in a lot of things to the point that our overindulgence in life's matters become more important than our service to God. And we let the overindulgence of this life sit down beside of us and overtake our duties to God. And I think, I'm not judging anybody. I just think we're all guilty of that because of the times we live in. I think we live in an overindulgent world. And I think we'd be all better off, not that all this stuff would be taken away from us, but we all view it in the right and proper order and understand it's there for us to enjoy, but let's not overindulge in it to the point that it takes away from our serving God. And let's don't ever forget to thank Him for what He's given us. We have more at our disposal than I guess that any civilization has ever had in the entire history of the world. And that is itself can just be overwhelming, what is out there for us to partake of. But here again, we have that responsibility. We have that common sense. Or we should have that enough common sense to understand where that can take us. And that our overindulgence does not really give us the peace that our Lord and Savior can give us. If we're overindulgent on anything, it should be to our service to God, that He might be pleased with our actions and what we do and how we conduct ourselves, how we conduct ourselves in this life. If thy enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he be thirsty, give him water to drink. For thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head, and the Lord shall reward thee. Those people that we come in contact out there in the world who may be or may become our enemies or people that we don't like or dislike for whatever reasons there are. Solomon says here to feed them if they're hungry, to give them water if they're thirsty, to do kind things to them because it will heap coals of fire upon their heads. It'll make them ashamed of their actions and the way they have been conducting themselves if they see us reacting to them not in a manner of anger, but in a manner of love. And here again, I am as guilty as anybody of this because I'm pretty opinionated. Thank you, darling. I am. And I have my likes and dislikes about people, and I have a tendency to I think, visually show what I'm thinking about people. And Solomon is saying here that we ought to be tolerant, that we ought to be kind, we ought to extend to them mercy and forgiveness and shower them with love. And I just find that just a hard thing to do. But I think our common sense would tell us that's what God would want. That's what He expects of us. And I failed Him in so many ways. It is better to dwell in the corner of the housetop than with a brawling woman in a white house. And I agree with that. I'm not saying I don't agree with that. I agree that. But I really think what this is talking about is avoiding confrontations. And if we can avoid a confrontation by keeping quiet rather than whatever else there might be available for us to do, it's the right way to conduct our lives, not only with our spouses, but with life in general. We're not out there looking for confrontation. We should be looking to avoid confrontation because it's not pleasing to God that we're confrontational to our spouses or to anybody that we come in contact with. So we should look to avoid angry confrontations. But I do agree that if they come up, it's better to go off in a corner somewhere and get away from the situation. A righteous man falling down before the wicked is as a troubled fountain and a corrupt spring. And you know, I think that applies to many of God's people. That's who the righteous is that he's talking about. Falling down is someone who falters in his work to God. You know, here we go. We have this responsibility to serve God. And many people today who proclaim to be children of God, who say they've been saved by his merciful grace, have fallen down before the wicked. You can't tell them any different out here in the world than you can from someone who's living for Satan. And that's a shame. It's a shame that there are God's people who live lives that you can't tell any difference from them and those who are sinners out here in the world living ungodly lives. And that goes back to what I was saying. We should conduct ourselves. Oh, I would like to conduct myself that people would look at me and see that there's something in what I have and that they would have a desire to have it. That should be all of our desires, to be that way. But there are those of us who have fallen by the wayside and who proclaim to have been saved and maybe be members of the church but have fallen away and doing things that are ungodly. And you can't tell them any different from the world out there. And this is a shame before God's eye that somebody would live like that. So we have this responsibility. We have this responsibility to our church, to God first, to our church, and to each other, that we all live a life that God might be pleased with. I mean, that's what we need to please God. That needs to be first and foremost in our thoughts and in our hearts each day, is to live a life to please God. It is not good to eat much honey. So for men to search their own glory is not glory. Or for men to seek their own glory is not glory. If you're deserving of glory, it will come. You know, we're not out here, as the old saying is, tooting our own horn. That's not a proper way to conduct ourselves, bragging about what it is that we have done. I'm sort of scared to do that anyway, to brag about what it is we might be doing, because when I think about it, and I go back to the point of one of these days I'm going to have to stand before God, as we all are. We're all going to have to stand before God. And what am I going to present to him? Can I be like Paul was, who said, I have fought a good fight. I have kept the faith. Well, you know, I don't think that I can do that. I don't think that I can honestly stand before God and think that I have fought a good fight and I've kept the faith. Oh, I've done a little here and I've done a little there, but it's not anything to brag about. It's not anything that I don't owe God much more than what I've done for him. And I don't say that I keep that attitude all the time, but that's the attitude we need to approach God with, is a humble, submissive attitude. Asking him to give us something to do But let the honor come from God. Don't go out around here looking for man to pat us on the back. Sometimes that can get us in big trouble. He that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls. Isn't that the truth? If we can't rule our own spirit, then we are so much miserable people. And the fact that we have no control over our desires or whatever it is that we want, I think God is much more pleased if when we are not so overindulgent, we rein in our desires, when we rein in our pride, and we rein in these things that would keep us in the world. You know, he set us aside as peculiar people, and that's what we need to be. We need to be about this business of being peculiar from the world. Set aside, set apart. Be something that God could be pleased with. We're not looking for praise from man. We're striving our best to do what it would be that God would look down upon us and might put a stamp of approval upon our lives. I pray that I live a life that God could be pleased with. I'm so afraid, though, that I don't in many cases. So that's my lesson. Anyone have anything?
I got a question. It says a cold water and a thirsty soul is like good news from far country. And I always heard that for somebody being saved far off. You agree with that?
Well, I don't know that I necessarily disagree with it, but I don't know that that's exactly what it's talking about. But I've heard that too, but a thirsty soul doesn't have to be lost. A thirsty soul, you can have a thirsty soul and be saved. You can be in a place where a word fitly spoken could help you get back in touch with God. Now, David didn't lose his salvation, but he lost the joy of it. And I think we all can do that. So whether we're lost or whether we're saved, a word fitly spoken can help us both ways. Anyone else?
Redbird. But I'm going to keep it to just a couple. The second verse where it talks about a reprover, a couple of times in my life where somebody has said something to me that really affected me came to my mind. But most important time was the Friday before I was saved. I was saved on the Saturday. But the Friday before I was saved, I was given an evaluation at work. And I had a tendency not to get great evaluations. I'm a pretty hard person to work with. Probably go back to that how we should be living a good life and people can see the Lord in us. But at that point, I was lost. But anyway, this particular manager that I had really made me take a second look at myself by what she had to say. And while I was laying in that chair when I got saved, I was really analyzing myself because she sparked something in me, you know, to think a little harder about myself. And so that made me really remember that. And then when it says, when you were talking about a brawling woman and to not be non-confrontational, well, how it's hard to be a reprover telling somebody something and be non-confrontational. To me, that's a conflict right there. That's something that I run into a lot in my family because my sister believes that you should bring everything out that you have an issue with and bring it to light and really talk about it and discuss it. Now, the Clemenses believe that you should not, that you should let that go. So it's an interesting place to be. So to be a reprover, right, and be non-confrontational, I'm not sure how you do that. So it's just food for thought for whatever that's worth to you.
Well, nobody says it's going to be easy. that was never... That was never a promise made that it was going to be simple.
And I have the same thing that you do when it comes to people that I don't like. You know I don't like you. And that's really bad. I'm sorry, but I don't cover that up very well. I don't know. And I fester. You know, it festers in me. And particular person's not in my world anymore, but that particular person could have made my skin crawl. And I did not know how to, you know, it's hard. I prayed about it, and I, you know, I really struggle in that area, so I completely understand where you come from.
And you know,
I was wondering if I didn't like you. If you don't know it, I do like you.
And
because you would know it.
And one thing that I'm my body language.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's hard to control your body language. I mean, it's hard enough to control your tongue, but your body language, when you just turn your back on somebody and walk off.
You don't have to say a word.
Right. All I can do is ask the Lord to forgive me. Anyone else? Don, would you dismiss us?
Yeah.